Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Southern horror writer Ronald Kelly. After years of writing, Kelly sold his first novel to Zebra Books in 1989. He was a popular paperback horror novelist for several years until the paperback horror boom ended abruptly in the mid-1990s. Ron's latest book is Southern Fried and Horrified, a memoir about his writing life as well as a writing guide. Ron, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, I mentioned that you had your first novel published in 1989, but I'm sure that was the culmination of years of writing and trying to break into book publishing. Can you tell us about your initial writing journey and what got you into writing fiction?
Well, I began writing in the junior year of high school. I originally wanted to be a comic book artist, and so I did comic books all during high school. At the beginning, I collaborated with a fellow classmate named Lowell Cunningham, and we collaborated, and he wrote the scripts and I did the artwork, and then I gravitated toward just writing fiction. I took journalism and creative writing classes, and after high school, I just wrote short stories and submitted and worked on a few novels and just honed my craft and tried to find my my writing voice, and it took 12 years between the time I began writing and my first published short story.
And I'm curious, at the time, were you writing horror exclusively, or what caused you to transition into writing horror?
Now, originally, I wanted to be a Western writer because I was heavily into Civil War and Old West history, and a lot of that had to do with my grandmother, who she would tell me family stories of Civil War history. I had family in both sides of the Civil War, that kind of piqued my interest in Civil War and Western history, and I tried to get into the Western genre for a while, and it was so narrow it was hard to break into. So eventually around 1986, I thought, well, maybe I should go back to my first love. And so I started writing horror stories, and it kind of clicked.
That's great. Well, I'm curious, what do you feel like you were learning during those 12 years of writing as you were trying to find your writing voice?
I guess I was just like, for one thing, developing a thick skin because, when I started out, I was very, you start out writing when you're young and you think, it's only going to be a few months and then you're going to start publishing and you're going to get rich and have bestsellers, and it doesn't work out that way, And so I developed a lot of patience, a thick skin. I pretty much learned the writing trade by trial and error. I just read a lot. I studied what the writers were doing, how they laid out chapters and character development and all that, and just kind of, made my stories my own, and put a Southern twist on it.
Sure. Well, growing up in rural Tennessee, how did you learn about, how to submit your fiction initially? And I should point out for those listening, this was years before the internet where you can submit now with the push of a button. How did you kind of learn the process of what many people used to do of mailing it out, self-addressed stamped envelope? How did you figure all that out?
Well, mainly, I subscribed to Writer's Digest magazine. That was one thing. And there was this big hardcover book you could buy in the bookstores called The Writer's Guide that had addresses and contact information for agents and mainstream publishers and magazines and stuff like that. That helped a lot. And later on, when I started submitting to the small press, horror magazines, there was like little magazines like Scavenger's Newsletter and the Horror Writers newsletter that had the open markets, magazines and what they were paying and how to submit and all that. So, you just had to, for a rural boy from Tennessee, you pretty much had to, scrounge and hunt down what the information you needed to make it. So,
well, as I mentioned earlier, your first horror novel was accepted by Zebra Books in 1989. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about your career with Zebra and how many books you published with them and what your experience was?
Okay. I had an agent toward the mid-80s. I had an agent at Scott Meredith Literary Agency. And I wrote Hindsight, which it's kind of a horror suspense novel, loosely based on my mother as a child and her psychic experiences. She actually had the gift of second sight. So I combined that with a triple murder that happened in the area where I grew up and set it in 1930s, and I wrote the novel Hindsight and submitted it to my agent. And he had it for 2.5 years shopping it around until he finally sold it to Zebra. And so about 6 months after I sold Hindsight, Zebra accepted Pitfall, my second novel. And then they began offering me multi book deals. And so I wrote for Zebra for 6 years straight. I was a full-time writer at that time.
And can you tell us what happened to your writing career in 1996?
Well, horror was going through a bad period then. Horror had gotten so hot in the late 80s and early 90s that the mass market publishers were kind of overextending themselves. They were buying up properties that in books and that wasn't very well written, taking on authors who really hadn't cut their teeth and was writing substandard horror fiction, and the readers were buying these books and getting burnt, and sales were falling off. And so the publishers were like letting their authors go and shutting down their publishing line. And that's what happened to Zebra. They, in 1996, it was October 1996, I remember it. I got a call from my agent, and he told me that Zebra had shut down their horror line and that I had two more books scheduled with them. And he said they would be returning those books to me, and I would be keeping any advance money I got, but I would no longer be writing mass market paperbacks for Zebra.
And so at that point, did you think about trying to move back into Westerns, or what did you do?
My agent, the one word of advice he gave me was to write anything but horror, because horror was almost poison back then. That editors wasn't reading it at that time, and it just so I did. I attempted to write Westerns for a while and even children's books, tried to do something different, and nothing was working for me. So I kind of got bitter and just kind of accepted the fact that I'd had my shot and it was gone. So I decided to just hang it up. I decided to stop writing horror or reading horror. So I stopped writing for 10 years.
And so can you tell us what caused you to come back to writing after 10 years?
I had a friend named Mark Hickerson, and he was a fan of my work back in the mid-90s and a good friend, and he kept encouraging me to come back. You know, he'd say, well, there's this new guy named Brian Keene, and he's written this zombie novel and revitalized the horror, you know, genre. And I said, well, no, I'm not interested in doing that anymore. And so he brought me some signed books, some signed by Brian and some from James Newman and other writers. And I remember Brian had written Thanks for the Inspiration when he signed my copy of The Rising. And it made me think that maybe, you know, maybe I'd done something positive, you know, when I was writing for Zebra. You know? And so I read James Newman's Midnight Rain and just loved it and thought, hey, maybe I can, you know, get back in here and do it again. So in July of 2006, I went online and announced that I was coming back to writing, and I've been writing ever since.
And so your latest book, as I mentioned, is Southern Fried and Horrified, a memoir about your writing career, mm-hmm. as well as a writing guide. What led you to write Southern Fried and Horrified?
Well, you know, I've been toying with the idea for a while. You know, I've been writing horror for 37 years. I would have been writing it 47 years if I hadn't stopped for 10 years. But I just thought, you know, I've been through heaven and hell and made a lot of mistakes, you know, did some good things and bad things. And, you know, as far as publishing and all that, then maybe, you know, people would be interested in my story. And maybe, you know, I could help some people avoid some mistakes, you know, some new writers and all that. And so I went on Twitter and I asked anybody, you know, I posed a question, you know, would anybody be interested in it? And, you know, people, you know, were very positive about it. And so I wrote a few chapters, you know, just to get the feel of it. And it came naturally. It was like almost like I was sitting down telling a story, you know. So I sent it to I knew that Stygian Sky, that Deafshead Press was going to have a subsidiary publishing house called Stygian Sky, and that they would be doing nonfiction books. So I sent a few chapters to Stygian Sky, and they loved it and wanted to do the book. So I went back and I wrote the rest of the chapters and added some writing advice and a few essays that I'd written in the past. And that's how Southern Fried and Horrified came about.
That's great. Well, I know that, you know, you, as we've discussed, you've written novels that you consider Southern horror. What does Southern horror mean to you, and what do you enjoy writing, and what about it do you enjoy writing?
I guess it's just drawn from like the stories that my grandmother used to tell me. It's like using locations and the people I grew up with, you know, just kind of taking those experiences and everything and putting my own horror twist to it. And it's just a kind of style of writing that I enjoy, and it comes naturally to me. And it's like, you know, Southern comfort food. It's like gravy and biscuits and pecan pie and all that. It's just something I like to write, and it's apparently other people like really enjoy reading it. So that's I guess that's what, you know, how I describe Southern horror.
Sure. Well, can you tell us about your writing two books for the Jake Logan series? And for those listeners who aren't familiar with the Jake Logan novels, it's a paperback adult Western series, and each book includes gunfights as well as a couple of sex scenes per book. And I'm curious, what led you to writing those two Jake Logan novels?
My agent at the time contacted me, and he said, there's a spot open at with the Jake Logan series. Actually, Jake Logan was ghostwritten by five different writers. And so there was a spot open. I don't know if someone had decided to move onward or somebody had died that had been writing it. But he asked me if I wanted to fill the spot. And at first, I kind of hesitated. You know, I was into writing the horror novels and all that. This was like in 1992, 93. So I was into writing the horror novels. And I thought, well, do I really want to get into ghostwriting, you know? And so I called up Joe R. Lansdale and asked him, because, you know, Joe and I had talked for years, and he was kind of a mentor to me. And so I asked him, you know, should I, you know, ghostwrite this series? And he said, I've ghostwritten before. So, you know, if you want to, go for it. So I told my agent I would, and I wrote two books for the Jake Logan series. And it was a very easy job, and it was a very lucrative job, because you'd write like a little 120-page, 150-page book in like 2 or 3 weeks and get paid a flat $5,000. So that wasn't bad money back then. That's not bad money now. So
yeah.
I wrote two books for the series, and then Jake Logan shut down for a while. It seemed like that was a thing back then, you know. And when they finally brought it back a few months later, they'd already filled my spot. So that was all it was for me and Jake Logan.
Gotcha.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, I know that you've written several novels in a series that you created called Dead Eye. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about those novels and what the genesis of that series was?
Dead Eye was came. Dead Eye was a long time coming. I made up the character of Dead Eye when I was 16 years old. I was reading like Lewinberg books, and there was a series called Edge by a writer named George Gilmore, I think it was his name, but a very violent kind of Western book series. And so I made up this character, never did anything with him, kind of stuck him, you know, back in the back of my mind. And then when I was trying to get into the Western genre, I did a huge, massive, epic novel with Dead Eye that was like 800 pages, and took me 2 years to write. Sent it to my agent, and he said, "I can't sell this." You know, so I was a very ambitious writer back then. I mean, I was only, you know, like in my 20s, early 20s or something like that. So. So I put Dead Eye, you know, my mother's got a cedar chest, you know, she left me when she passed, and I put Dead Eye in the cedar chest. It's almost like a coffin size cedar chest. So I put Dead Eye in the coffin, and then later on, when I was writing for Zebra, I pitched it as a supernatural Western series to Berkeley Books, and they were interested at first, but then they decided that I really couldn't sustain, you know, like a monster a book for a long period of time. They were accustomed to putting out like 200 or 300 books in a series, you know, paperback series. So, yeah, I agree that I couldn't have sustained it for a whole lot. I mean, I'd had him fighting aliens and Bigfoot and stuff like that. But I put him back in the senior chest again. And I had mentioned it when I was writing books for Paul Goblich with Thunderstorm Books. I mentioned Dead Eye to him, and he was kind of interested. And then we went on to do the Essential Ronald Kelly Collection, where we did all the Zebra books, Zebra novels in hardcover. And then just recently, you know, we decided to do Dead Eye, you know, in five volumes, you know. And so Thunderstorm is putting out the limited edition hardcover. And at the time, Silver Shamrock was putting out Dead Eye. They put out the first Dead Eye book, you know, in ebook and paperback. And mm-hmm. then Silver Shamrock closed their doors, and Crossroads Press took on Dead Eye. So so far we put out two Dead Eye books. Book one is Vampires, Zombies, and Mojo Men, and number two is Werewolves, Swamp Critters, and Hellacious Haints. So number two was fun, really fun to write, because it was like a monster fest. I mean, it had all kinds of monsters and demons and stuff, you know. There's a in the series, there is a like a dimensional portal called the Hole Out of Nowhere, and there's a character called Evangeline. She's a dark witch, and she conjures like demons and old gods and demonic bounty hunters to come out of that portal to battle Deadeye and his sidekick Job.
And so, do you have plans to? You said it was going to be five volumes.
Yeah. I'm gonna. It won't be long till I start on volume three, which is going to be called Man Eaters, Mummies, and Murderous Maniacs.
Well, I know that you recently retired from your day job. Are you planning to go full tilt back into writing fiction?
Yeah, I am. Probably after Christmas. Christmas has been so hectic, you know. Mm-hmm. And plus, I've had things to do around the house here. But after Christmas, I'm gonna hit it full force, and probably gonna write the sequel to Fear, my magnum opus, and so I'm looking forward to that. We're actually putting Fear out in a author's preferred edition, and that should be coming out later this month or. In early January, and by Crossroad Press.
That's great. Well, I'm curious, what's your writing process when you're working on a novel or a short story? Do you outline the novel extensively, or do you just dive into the narrative and see where it takes you?
With a novel, I do a loose outline, so I know where it's going from beginning to end. Because, you know, when I was writing for Zebra, I was writing the big door stoppers, and which was a stipulation in their contracts that you write something 450 to 500 pages. And so you pretty much had to know what you were going to do from beginning to end. And so I still do that a little. I hadn't written very many novels since, I think the last one was the Buzzard Zone in 2015, and it wasn't a doorstopper. It was like 250 pages or something like that. But so with novels, yeah, I outline a little bit and give it a lot of thought. But with short stories, I pretty much just get a germ of an idea, and then I sit down and let it take me where it goes. You know.
Yep. So I'm curious, what writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories or novels?
I'd say try to have a lot of patience. Try to, you know, stick in there for the long haul, because it's not going to be, you know, sometimes it's instantaneous. Some people, you know, really, you know, hit fast and hard, and but for the most part, it's, you know, you could be looking at years of honing your craft and finding your voice and submitting, and you'll probably get tons of rejection slips, and don't let that, get you down. Just keep on going, but don't be hard on yourself. Don't beat yourself up when you don't make a sale, stuff like that, And one thing is don't put all your eggs in one basket. I wouldn't submit exclusively to one publisher. It's better to, with the wealth of indie publishers now, I've actually got like six publishers now. So, I spread my work evenly, where if a publisher goes down, then, I've got several more to take up the slack.
Sure. Well, what novels or nonfiction books have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Well, I've read, Candace Nolan's Bishop was really great. That was a great novel. I've read Richard Chismar's Chasing the Boogeyman. That was great. And the last Gwynny novel he did with Stephen King, that was great. I've got a, I pretty much write more now than I read. So I'm hoping I can really get back into the reading since I'm retired now, got more time. And I've got a whole bookshelf full of books in here that I'm ready to read. So
that's great. Well, where can people find you online if they want to learn more about you and your novels?
Well, you can find me at my website, ronaldkelly.com. I have a newsletter called the Fair County Chronicle, and you can subscribe to that. That's through Substack. You can usually go on my website or go on some of my social media platforms and find a subscribe tab to that if you want to subscribe to that. I put that out every other week, with news about, upcoming books and stuff like that. And sometimes I have a free story or an essay or something on the newsletter. You can find me at Facebook at Ronald Kelly. You can find me at Twitter at Ronald Kelly 4. You can find me at Instagram as Dixie Darkin.
That's great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Ronald Kelly, horror writer and author of the new memoir and writing guide, Southern Fried and Horrified. The book is on sale now, so go buy a copy. And Ron, thanks for doing this interview.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Absolutely.
Howdy. I'm Ronald Kelly. Today, I'm going to read an excerpt from my memoir writing guide, Southern Fried and Horrified, from Stygian Sky Media. Writers are all about stories, reading them, creating them, writing them, selling and publishing them, and then there's living them. Usually that's the one that folks never know or hear about. If it's written down at all, it's usually in journals or diaries, private thoughts, and secret angst that they've wrestled with and endured behind the keyboard or elsewhere. Most of the time, it's things that's best forgotten or not to be dwelled on at all. Lost opportunities, anthology deadlines missed, rejections, pages upon pages of them. Or maybe it has nothing to do with writing at all. Maybe the story involves their life in general. Mundanely dull or stressed to the point of overload and devastation. A difficult, abusive upbringing, or happy, idyllic childhood. Where they lived or when, the kinds of movies they watched and books they read. Whether they were bullied as a child, or perhaps were the bullies themselves. That kind of thing is what forges a writer, and gives them the drive to do it day after day. To take little bits and pieces of things in their head like useless scrap from a junkyard and build entire worlds. To deem themselves the god of prose and conjure living, breathing characters that you love or hate, loathe or feel pity for. Some writers have a knack for pushing all the buttons in all the right ways, making you so angry you could strangle someone who is only made of words on a page, or causing you to weep bitterly for a person who is merely a figment of the author's imagination, brought to life in broad strokes of creativity and raw emotion. Sometimes a writer feels the need to shelf their fictional worlds for a short while and reflect on the real one, the one they grew up in, smiled and agonized through, loved and grieved in. Some believe their journey thus far to be utterly uninteresting and lackluster, sort of like searching for their reflection in the murky surface of a mud puddle. Others, fueled by ego and arrogance, believe that their story will be put all others to shame, when in fact all they're doing is bragging and lifting annoyance and resentment to fresh new levels. Every now and then, if an author is famous enough, popular enough, or respected enough, they feel compelled to share their story, and others desire to hear it in return. I may not be any of the categories mentioned above, but I do have a story to tell. One that started over 60 years ago and includes a writing career that has spanned 37 years to date. Most folks who know old Ron, both recently or since the dinosaur days, know me as a straight-shooting, honest type of fellow. Willing to tell you how it is now or back then without pandering, pulling punches, or kissing ass. If I tell you a story, it's going to be one forged from the heart and soul, sincere and straight to the point. Sometimes I can make you smile like a briar-chewing mule, while other times I can make you break down and cry, ugly sobbing with snot slinging and all. That's just the way I am. Always have been, always will. When I took to social media and made my desire known to pen a memoir of sorts, sprinkled liberally with writing advice and anecdotes, the response was positively unanimous. When Brian Keene, one of the finest horror authors of his generation, and well into the next, tweets, "Please, please, 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 please," in response, then you know if Brian wants it, well, hell, you just got to go and do it. The Ronald Keller you will read about during the course of this book may or may not be the one you are familiar with. There have been many evolutions and incarnations over the years. The introverted but imaginative child, the awkward, painfully shy nerd, the angry young man with lofty aspirations that constantly eluded him. Then later, the small press author who scored a cherished place in mass market publishing and lost it almost as quickly. The bitter disillusioned has-been who walked away for a decade. And the one who rediscovered his first love, took a deep breath, and gathered the nerve to give it all one more try. So sit on down there and let me tell your story, one that I know by heart. And on the way, we'll talk about books and movies and influences and the business of laying our souls bare on the printed page. I promise to keep it as truthful and as engaging as I can manage, whether it tickles like a feather or cuts deeply like the edge of a razor. As Jerry and the Dead used to sing, what a long, strange trip it's been, and it has been so far.